Hi, this is Randy Landry, and this is my 38th podcast, my new format, common-sense-america.com. It's also my blog, all previously to this time of changing, I was using Buzzsprout, and I ported all those podcasts over to a group called Category Podcast in my blog site. So I just gave you the address to that. And today I'm going to read from Imprimis. I get a monthly magazine as well. And it's entitled Today's Firestorm and the Declaration. It was written by Larry P. Orne. And without any further ado, let's begin. Two momentous things come together as the New York year approaches. The first is the 250th anniversary of the greatest documented political history, the Declaration of Independence. The second is the national firestorm that rages over its meaning. Trump, the first of the contrary winds, fueling our national firestorm is Donald Trump, who has closed out his first whirlwind year. Crime is down in several cities where he has sent the National Guard. The economy is doing pretty well, and predictions are that it will continue to decline or quicken. The stock market. It was high, and the range of predictions was the same. Iran and Hamas are weaker, thanks to vital part to Israel, and the cauldron of the Middle East is a little cooler. 300,000 fewer people work for the federal government after the number had increased to 240,000 during the increased by 240,000 during the Biden administration. Military recruitment and defense spending are up, and Secretary Worf Hedseth gave a stirring speech in the military about its purpose, which is to fight. Secretary of State Rubio has given some wonderful speeches about the purposes of American foreign policy, and he and others settled around the Middle East at speed to put together a fragile yet promising peace deal. Secretary of Education McCann has cut the department in half and is after the rest. Secretary of the Interior Burgum is looking for ways to use the land, and Secretary of Energy Wright is looking up for energy. Attorney General Bondi seems to know no fear. Vice President Vance frightened the daylight out of Europe, calling for elimination of wokeness and for increased defense spending. A blizzard of executive orders has given regulatory relief, stemmed the tide of the DEI, and reduce the size and reach of the federal establishment. Shower pressure is up. You can now take a hot shower under a heavy stream. Pressure is up on colleges too, which has been violating civil rights systematically. Tariffs are higher here and abroad, and that is still shaking out. The federal debt is rising a bit slower. The border is closed. The Ukraine war is a stubborn disaster. Trump is working on it and asking Western Europe to pay the bill. The resistance. The other wind blows from the self-described resistance to the elected government, and it's picking up. The No King demonstration has turned out a lot of people, or fewer than a lot, depending on whom you talk to. Mondami is the first self-proclaimed socialist mayor-elect of New York, Virginia Brewer. Jews have been harassed on our college campuses with almost European intensity. An assassin killed Charlie Kirk, and reporters are that several Trump administration officials and their families have been moved onto military bases due to threats to their safety. Violent attacks upon law enforcement officers proliferate. Zany radicalism abounds both in the left and the right. Left and right being promiscuous terms that mean even less today than usual. Young people on the left seem enamored of Marx, and on the right, many gravitate towards Nietzsche. Nick Fuentes, who has a big audience, professes to like both Hitler and Stalin, who to prepare did cooperate to carve up their neighbors before they waged merciless war on each other. Churchill made up sense of that by saying that National Socialism and Communism differ as the North Pole differs from the South. Many young people do not seem to realize that the North and South Poles are bad places to live. Their confusion stems from the reasons that are deeper, but also limpid, visible to the bottom. What do we see when we look down to the bottom? We see a generation in which too many have been taught that the only truth is in human will, which then becomes sovereign. The past is presented to them as a dark time, now happily superseded. Therefore, they learn not, no edifying or useful history. The quest for truth dies not only in the humanities, but increasingly in the sciences. To think there is one right answer to a math problem has been derided as a racist concept. And of course, we confess accused sexes. Gloria Steinem attributes the feminist saying, "A woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle," to a 22-year-old Australian, Irma Dunn, who said she wrote a verse on the wall on a toilet stall. It perhaps did not occur to her that a fish and a bicycle could occupy that stall till kingdom come and never produce Irma Dunn. Such ignorance leaves boys free to become useless wimps or dangerous predators. It leaves too many women to themselves, even if they wish to face the fulfilling trial of children. Little wonder we are not reproducing even at a replacement level. Little wonder that so many boys and girls gravitate toward different, if ultimately indistinguishable, wastelands. When human, we will become sovereign, unencumbered by nature and divorced from God. We are left with movements, people organized to impose their will on their adversaries. This is a terminal product of historicist philosophy in modern social science, the war not of all against all, but of movement against movement. At the bottom of the rot is a set of doctrines that have made the American government and are remaking the society. These doctrines are the abnegation of the Declaration of Independence. Under these doctrines, there are no truths at last, no commands from above that must be obeyed. There is only what people do to one another. And by this process, they shape the society and each other. What they ought to do does not enter into it. This is the great discovery that plagues our day. The sovereignty and history of time and of circumstance. Discovering there is no ought, we can break free by reinventing everything according to our desires. This is why Nick Fuentes giggles while he calls for rape, the gulag, and the Auschwitz, while the thuggish Antifa mobs have become the vanguard of the mainstream left, why so many deny the fact of two biological sexes and defend the sexual mutilation of children. As a torture O'Brien proves to his student Winston in George Orwell's 1984, 2 + 2 = 5, or any number you please. These doctrines have remade the American government. This can be seen in the change of the size of government and relative to society since progressivism took hold, in the change in the number of people working for the government and in the wealth gathered around Washington, D.C., and in the centralizing of authority and resources into the government and within government in the level of taxation and in the national debt. Here is an easy measure where our laws made now. Are they made by the Congress or by unelected agencies? It was common doctrine in America's founding that the legislative power, the most important of the powers of the government, cannot be delegated. Article 1 of the Constitution, which concerns the Congress, unlike the articles concerning the executive and judiciary, begins with the word all. Legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in the Congress of the United States. In his second Trustees of Government, John Locke writes, "The legislative cannot transfer the power of making laws from any other hands, where being but a delegated power from the people. They who have it cannot pass it to others." Senator Mike Lee of Utah keeps a cabinet in his office that looks to be over 4 feet high and over 3 feet wide. It contains the law and regulations enacted by the federal government in a single two-year congressional session. In the two-year session since 2000, an average of just under 4,800 pages per session were added by the Congress itself, and just over 150,000 pages per session were added by the bureaucracy. Nobody elected a bureaucracy to do that. Until a year ago, no one could even dismiss bureaucrats from the office. There is the firestorm made up of two opposites colliding. The Declaration of Independence, the solution to all of this, if we will but adopt it, is found in the Declaration. It tells us what we are. It tells us how to govern ourselves and say what you want about Donald Trump, but is in fact that he loves the Declaration. He's had an original copy of it installed in the Oval Office and wants the celebration of it to be full throttled, sorted. An extraordinary development, Hillsdale College has joined with the U.S. Department of Education of all places and with the White House to help with the celebration. We are making videos in the White House to mark the milestones in a year that led up to the July 4th, 1976. They are explaining the events and inviting people to read and understand the document. We are paying for all that ourselves. In addition, Hillsdale Online Education Office and Hillsdale Studios will be releasing two documentaries to explain the American founding, one on colonial America and one on the Revolution. The latter, we hope, in the theaters first. To commemorate is to remember together. It is time for us Americans to do that. It is not so hard. Declaration is 1,350 words long. Its majesty is matched by its pithiness. It contains an entire account to the source, the purpose, and the manner of government in the United States. And those three things we found in the solution to our problem. First, the source of our government, the laws of nature and of nature's God. These are the things we know by seeing and thinking about the things around us in nature. This satire from Erna Dumm about the fish and the bicycle and the man and the woman would not be funny or meaningful except we know by nature what is a fish and what is a bicycle, what is a man and what is a woman, and we know how they are related or not related. Under these laws of nature, the Declaration says that all men are created equal. Put any common noun in place of man, and the formula still works. For instance, all horses are created equal, all men equally horses. But men and horses are different things. All men, meaning human beings, are equal, and human being human, which makes them equal in their rights. You can ride a horse if you're a little boy or a girl, and you can even ride in the back of your father, but only if your father gives permission. Jefferson, explaining the Declaration shortly before his death on his 50th anniversary, wrote that the mass of mankind has not been born with saddles on their backs, nor is favored few booted and spurred, ready to ride them legitimately by the grace of God. Similarly, in the Lincoln to Douglas debates in 1858, Stephen Douglas asked Abraham Lincoln why a man might take his hog into the free territory of Nebraska and have it protected by law, but not his slave. Lincoln replied that there is no reason at all, that the hog and the slave are the same thing, but they are not. Even down in the slave states, they recognize this, which is why they pass laws against teaching slaves to read, but pass no such laws regarding hogs. Understanding these distinctions, we have the restoration of nature itself and of moral law, recognized repeatedly in the Declaration, that constitutes the rights inherent in our humanity. Here we have the family, property, justice, work, learning, consciousness, and worship. Nature is impossible of extinction until the last trumpet sounds, and therefore our rights cannot be extinguished. Everything we know through our perception of nature and our understanding of the divine. Next, the purpose of our government, the Declaration describes to what end we are to be governed, namely the protection of our rights, the rights that are written in our nature. These are inherent in man himself, instilled by the Creator himself. What are these rights? To do the things a human being can do by nature. Think, work, speak, learn, worship, and defend. We are born able to do these things. We must do them or be diminished. We have a right to them. Finally, the Declaration describes the manner in which we must be governed. One government must be representative in form. We governed must consent to it. This is entirely natural and right. I can tell you from my experience running a college that young people will put up with most anything if they have consented to it, and almost nothing if they have not. That is human nature. 2. Government must be limited. It may only exercise the powers we delegate to it. Our rights are ours by nature, and we delegate authority to the government only on condition that our rights be protected, and only in certain ways. The Constitution, which allows declaration by 11 years, but in principle follows it every way, lays out a government which local things are managed locally by the people nearest and most affected. The federal government has only the specified powers delegated. Today, through a misreading of what is called the Commence Clause in the Constitution, the federal government regulates everything down to the footpaths in Hillsdale, Michigan. It also has dominance in public finance, which is why the streets are too often unattended, and in many cities, unpoliced. This is a cause of centralization. 3. Government must act in all dispositive ways through elected representatives. There were to be no permanent officials who made laws so numerous and so complex that they cannot read them. The unelected bureaucrats that fit this description only today are the only ones with kingly powers among our leaders. And a delicious irony, it is they that the No Kings movement sets out to protect from our elected representatives. 4. The powers of government must be divided, not concentrated in the Declaration. They are united only in the hands of God, or the perfect being, who appears in the Declaration as a legislator, the laws of nature and nature's God, the executive divine providence, and the judiciary, supreme judge of the word. Those powers are not to be combined in human hands. Here, in a beautiful outline, is the basis of our country, the most successful free country in history. Its anniversary is a chance to remember this. A proper celebration of the Declaration will be helpful in all our troubles. It will be helpful to young men and women who are lost today by helping them to rediscover nature and reason. I was privileged to know teach Charlie Kirk. His widow, Erica, read from his journals at his memorial service, much of which she read were notes to an Aristotle class. Studying in the classics, he learned to appreciate the fact that things are real. 2 + 2 does in fact equal 4 in all cases and always. Men are not to be ridden as horses because they are not the same thing. The Declaration of Independence, like the classic authors, teaches that things are real. Charlie was inspiring because he was able to show that 10 million of young men and women and to help them find their way. Nick Fuentes has called himself the alt-Charlie. He is rather the anti-Charlie. He lives in unreality. In our college right now is a young man by the name of Luke who has started an organization named after the 12th Legion, Fulmine of ancient Rome. The Emperor Licinius put members of the 12th Legion in freezing water to die unless they would renounce Christianity. In the commemoration of that, Luke and the members of his group go to our local lake in freezing weather before the sun rises and stand in the water singing hymns and reciting Bible passages. This is a very young mannish thing to do, but what do they learn from it? To serve, to be strong, to be free, to look up. These are the kinds of things young Americans who have save our country. The oldest building in Hillsdale campus was dedicated on the 4th of July, 1863. Many of the young men who attended that dedication would serve in the Civil War. Their numbers surpassed any non-military college excepting Yale. 4 of them would be rewarded with the Medal of Honor. Why did they go? They believed in freedom because they believed that things are real. At Hillsdale next year, we will carry on teaching here on campus with intensity and purpose that things are real. We will teach it as a well to increasing millions of people through our online courses. We will teach it in our K-12 charter schools, which number close to 100, with thousands using our curriculum all for free. We will teach it to anyone who will listen and wishes to learn. And we will celebrate the Declaration of Independence on its 250th anniversary, as we have always done, wholeheartedly and with a full throat, as it was founded in our country, so today it can save it. Well, that was very interesting. the language, I don't know, kind of choppy, but that's neither here nor there. And I apologize. He threw a couple words that I have not seen before, and it took me a second to pronounce them. But all in all, it was interesting. I don't know if I agree with everything in it, but so that concludes the podcast for today. And feel free to make any comments. You can do that at my blog. And without any further ado, I'm going to call it a day. See ya.